Kadosh. Remember, remember, Adonai Eloheinu.
Welcome to Romamu, an open-hearted Jewish community and house of worship, learning, and spiritual growth. You're listening to Romamu's podcast, where we share words of Torah, insights, and inspiration from Romamu clergy. Thank you for being with us.
Many years ago, I made a decision to officiate a wedding in Paris, which until this week had been the most disorienting experience of my life. You see, the wedding was only 2 days after Yom Kippur, and for all sorts of reasons, I had said yes. And suddenly there I was, a mere 24 hours after the most immersive and sublime spiritual ecstasy that is our Yom Kippur at Romamu. And I found myself walking around in a completely different world, a world that was completely and utterly foreign to me and to what I had just been through. I felt as alone as I could have possibly felt. And so I looked for a synagogue. And I remember the feeling when I walked in, my whole body relaxed. But none of that compared to what happened for me this week, which was of another order entirely. I don't think I've ever experienced such spiritual whiplash in my life, and nor have I ever felt as found. After much back and forth, and after saying no twice to other missions, I flew to Israel this past Sunday with a group of over 30 rabbis from across the United States and from across the denominational spectrum. I went to Israel for me. I went because in my soul, in the essence of my being, I'm Israeli. Although born here, I've always known from the very first trip that I took there with my family in 1982 for my bar mitzvah, that I was home. I immediately felt something in me that I had never felt before. I felt at ease, a sense of being gotten, a kind of chemistry. I don't know if you can speak about chemistry with a country or a culture, but I had that chemistry with Israeliness. That feeling never went away. It drew me to Israelis who came to the Jewish day school I attended, Ramaz. I befriended them, and so did my brother. We felt a kinship with them, felt we would steward them. It drew me to an Israeli girlfriend in the senior year of high school. And it made me want to make Aliyah after spending a gap year in Jerusalem in 1987. And so I love Israel, and my heart is always with her and the people who live there. So I went there to be with my family, and I went there for me. I and so many of us have been living in a crazy limbo space. Unlike our brothers and sisters who live in Israel, whose shock, grief, rage, and ongoing trauma have a clear avenue of expression, feeling, and inaction, those of us living outside of Israel feel the same feelings, but without the collective sense of purpose, and especially an immersive, shared societal field that could anchor us in a reality that would match our inner space. In Israel, nothing is the same. Walking in through the doors of the airport, seeing immediately the hostage signs everywhere and bring them home everywhere. Looking on the faces of everyone we were walking around, just the sense that everybody was walking around in a collective shared experience of shock, trauma, ongoing sadness and grief, and solidarity and mission and purpose. Of course, that experience can be too much, maybe. The register of life, though, even if it's intense, is still coherent. For Jews in the diaspora, Jewish space and sensibilities are not as thick and as contiguous. So we feel a bit off walking around in a world for whom Thanksgiving and Christmas are now around the corner, and all of the infinite other ways in which we are reminded daily that we are strangers in a strange land. Even here in New York City, the largest Jewish population center outside of Israel, it feels completely different than Israel at this moment. Understandably so, but frustratingly so. And I knew that. And so I needed to be surrounded by that feeling of being in it together, being with one another. I needed to be with them, to not leave them alone, or maybe not leave myself alone. Closing the gap meant greater coherence between how I was living and how I was feeling. I went to Israel for me because I was deeply, deeply alone. And I went to Israel also for Israelis, because they also feel very alone. I went to Israel to let Israelis see that we are here in the United States, that we here in the United States are with them, that we are also experiencing Jew hatred in the United States, and that we are one family. I went to be a witness to what they are living through daily, hour by hour. Everywhere I went, we met incredibly resilient and courageous individuals every day. Average Jews and Israelis living under extraordinary trauma and stress. We sat and listened to survivors like 21-year-old Shiri from Kibbutz Cholit, who described how both of her parents were murdered while her younger brother was shot in the belly, only an inch away from certain death. She told us that their black humor helps them get through every day. Her injured brother caller up to say that it was his rock-hard abs that saved his life, and it gave her a good laugh. Or a woman in the same listening session whose 91-year-old Holocaust-surviving father and his helper were slaughtered on that day by the embodiment of evil. I went in Israel to sit in a healing circle for women who were sexually violated on October 7th, a crime that the various international feminist and women organizations have failed to condemn, as they themselves have invoked these women of invoking the biblical D-knife to help heal them, who in this week's Torah portion is also raped, and her intergenerational story gruesomely repeated on her descendants as the entire world watched silently. I went to Israel to be with Israelis to visit two badly wounded soldiers, Yotam and Yossi. Yotam is a thin young man, recently married, who was wounded in the neck by the shrapnel of an anti-tank missile. As medics frantically tried to stop the bleeding on the right side of his neck, he swears he heard them say, "He's a newlywed, he's a newlywed. Hurry, hurry." And he thanks his wife for marrying him so that he could live. We then moved on to Yossi, who was sitting in the visitor's area, his entire left side of his body now having undergone multiple operations over the past 5 weeks, his spirit fully alive. Yossi, who many would call a settler, lives in parts of the inner city of Jerusalem, told us, "I don't believe the Jewish people are divided at all." He said, "They only appear divided at times, but really deep underneath, we are all one." He said he almost died. His body was riddled with shrapnel, but he kept remembering that he had a purpose to serve Am Yisrael, to serve the people of Israel. I went to Israel to meet with Israelis like Avi Dabush, a well-known peace activist living in Kibbutz Nirin near the Gaza border, who told us how hard it is now to hold on to a vision of future peace, but that he will never stop believing it will come. His goal will not change even if the roadmap ahead, he said, must now be different. I went to Israel ultimately for you, for this community, to bring back what I saw and felt, which I've just done a little bit of, and to remind all of us how lucky we are to have Israel and for Israel to have us. When asked yesterday at the close of our group what I was bringing home to my community, I wrote down in a stream of consciousness, "Here's what I know after having been here for 4 days. Israel is one of the most incredible places in the world. Israel is not a simple place. It isn't a perfect place, but are there any? Israel is a million Israels. There's the Israel where one is walking into Hadassah Hospital to visit a Yotam, one of those wounded soldiers. One walks into his room and sees a hijab-wearing nurse taking his temperature and tending to him tenderly. There is the Israel of waking up in hip, cool Tel Aviv, one of the most gay-friendly, queer-friendly cities in the world, hopping onto the high-speed railway to Jerusalem, where while waiting on the platform, an Orthodox woman and a religious Muslim woman are each praying their morning prayers next to one another, and I begin to cry, only to have my tears increase when I get onto the high-speed rail and see two Jews, one Hasidic and one Sephardi-looking, begin to wrap talit and tefillin, as businessmen work on their business and on their iPhones and computers, and the hipster Tel Avivnik with tattoos all over his body watches YouTube videos next to a baby-faced soldier with the weight of our security on her slender shoulders. Israel is a million Israels. Israel is the El Al airline that has travelers' prayers, the ones I know by heart, on the screen next to the Academy Award-winning movies as we take off. And that when scrolling through the top podcasts, I come across a huge slew of Talmud and Torah classes I can listen to on the way to Israel. Israel is the feeling that being Jewish is normal, nothing unique, that I don't have to reach for my yarmulke as I leave Machon Hartman on the first night there to take it off, lest somebody look at me and think, uh-oh, I breathe a sigh of relief under this beautiful sky in Jerusalem saying, just to be Jewish. Israel is a million Israels. It is the melange of different Jewish cultures and traditions all forced in the span of 75 years to come together, to build together, to fight together, to flourish together, all while never forgetting for a moment that it could all collapse as it almost did on October 7th. At any moment, there is arrogant Israel, unjust Israel, selfish Israel, paranoid Israel, ugly Israel, beautiful Israel, colorful Israel, powerful Israel, and vulnerable Israel. There is socialist Israel and capitalist Israel, high-tech Israel and donkey-riding Israel. There is Gal Gadot Israel and Rav Kook Israel. Israel of settlers in the West Bank and settlers in Tel Aviv, depending on whom you ask. There is corrupt Israel. There is just Israel. There is an Israel that sends rescue workers around the world at the drop of a dime to help anyone who needs it. There is exceptional Israel, and there is ordinary Israel. I could go on and on and on. And ultimately, there is now more than ever, and most importantly, united Israel. In this week's third portion, the Torah tells us that Yaakov Avinu, Jacob, our patriarch, has split his camp because he's afraid that he's going to be killed. He split his camp into two camps and taken his wife and their children to one side of the Yabok River, which is, of course, a play on his own name. He has to cross over a river that has his own name on it in order to find his true name. And while he's alone on the other side of the banks of the river, a mysterious man begins to wrestle with him. And the Torah tells us, Vayivater Yaakov levado, and Jacob was left alone. Vayavek ish imo, and he wrestled. He got messy, got dusted up with a mysterious force until the sun came up. We're all wrestling with aloneness, a sense of isolation. Some in this community and other communities who don't yet feel the rabbis or the leaders fully integrate their narratives. A feeling of isolation can happen to anyone in any place. A feeling, am I alone? Do they get me? Am I safe here? It's so remarkable to go to Israel and sit and listen to three remarkable rabbinic students whose husbands are in Gaza right now, each of them talking about their aloneness. That even though the entire united Israel is together, they each feel uniquely their own pain. And when someone calls and when someone sits with them and someone knows that they're experiencing it, they're less alone. Vayivater Yaakov levado, Jacob was alone and wrestled until the light came. We're all wrestling in our own ways, trying to make sense of what's happening in a world that seems to be indifferent to what took place and is still going on and on and on. We sat with the parents of Hirsch Goldberg Pollan, one of those who was wounded and then abducted, whose whereabouts are unknown and whose health is also unknown, lost a limb on that day, lost his left arm. We sat with the parents who are unbelievable human beings, unbelievable. And they said, you can't, he said, we're not living where you're living. People said to them, how are you going forward every day? How do you wake up every morning? He said, we're not living where you're living. And I remember we said to one, how do they live with that sense of isolation, that sense of loneliness? Even with everybody, can be lonely. So something amazing happened in that opening nigun that you all joined me in. Shlomo Carlbach, a blessed memory, put together a verse from the book of Isaiah, chapter 2, that I referenced earlier. And this is the verse. In chapter 2 of the book of Isaiah, Isaiah is giving a future vision of what the world will look like. He says, Enei gafut adam shafel, the haughty look of humans shall be brought low, ruach anashim, the shach ruach anashim, and the pride of mortals shall be humbled. V'niskav Adonai levado b'yamahu, and God alone will be alone, exalted on that day. And if Shlomo put that verse, God's aloneness, God who, as the principle of love and have a common humanity, is exalted above all haughtiness, he put it in conversation with Jacob and his aloneness and his wrestling. And he made it into a melody. So v'niskav, v'niskav Hashem levado, God alone will be exalted on that day. And Jacob wrestled, he wrestled till the morning, he wrestled till the morning light, and Jacob was left alone. He put these two parts in conversation, God's aloneness and Jacob's aloneness. An amazing rabbi in Jerusalem named Rabbah Tamar Elad Applebaum spoke yesterday at the Healing Circle for the Women, in which he spoke about Dina's silence, that after what happened to Dina, the Torah doesn't tell us that Dina spoke again. And Rabbi Tamar Elad Applebaum said something that made me on the spot. I almost fell on the floor. I was shaking for like a half hour. She said that in that moment of such radical existential psychic aloneness and isolation of being levad, God was Dina's best friend. And she tried to paint a picture of a Dina who was going through something that was absolutely unspeakable, and that God stood there with her, listening. And I just was shaking from power of that image of what each and every person in their own aloneness and then their own inexpressible grief and inexpressible confusion and disorientation, wandering the streets of Paris, wondering how we got here. And that on our shoulder, God loves a community, a friend, someone, something that is so much bigger than haughtiness and so much bigger than arrogance and so much bigger than certainty and so much bigger than jingoistic tributes, but real presence and intimacy. I went to Israel to feel that intimacy. I went to Israel to feel and to say to those people that I have no idea what you're feeling and you have no idea what I'm feeling, but I want to be with you shoulder to shoulder. And so yesterday, as we made our way to Ben-Gurion, a group of rabbis sitting in cabs started to sing this song out of nowhere. I don't know why, because it's Vayishlach and it has the verse in it. And there were three cabs of people singing on the way from Jerusalem to Ben Gurion this song. And then we all got quiet. We walked into Ben Gurion and we kept humming it here. We're like humming it. And then we got into an elevator and a bunch of like people that probably a lot of us wouldn't even, I don't know if you would talk to them. I don't know. You're looking at them thinking like, would they talk to me? Would I talk to them? And we all looked at each other and I just started humming. I started humming. I looked at them. It's like, I na 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 na. And you were like, it was crazy. People got out video cameras. It was in the elevator. The elevator was shaking. We were going up, and they were like, it's like, we are not alone. We are one big family. You are us and we are you. And it was just, and then we got out of the elevator, we kept singing. And then people started joining. It's too much, you know, it's too much for any one person to hold. Any one community, it's too much. I can't stop thinking and feeling so many things that I saw. And one of those three amazing rabbinical students who are now waiting for their husbands to come home safely every day, not hearing from them, they can't take their phones in when they're in Gaza and they don't hear. They said they look at the WhatsApp, you know, we have two check marks. They said that one check mark stays like that for days on end. And they stare at the text waiting for it to be read. And that's how they know. So she said her husband came home from Gaza for a few days for Shabbat. And she doesn't know what he's seen. She doesn't know what he's seen or what's happened around him. And he doesn't want to talk about it, of course. Too soon. He just wants to be with the kids. Wants to have Shabbat, he wants to do his laundry, get some, he's been wearing the same shoes for 2 weeks, the same socks. And at one point she started to cry. And then he looked at her, he said, I can't cry. And she said, I know. And then they looked at each other and she said, we'll cry after, she said. I want whoever, I don't know if anybody in Israel ever watches anything that happens here at Romamu, but I just want to say to them, I promised I would bring back the stories. I promised that I would bear witness the immense pain and the immense strength and the immense courage and the immense diversity and the incredible resilience of the Jewish people and the Israeli people. And that I pray to God that this war ends soon and that we as a Jewish people and as a nation can sing our songs and others can sing their songs and we can dance together, that we can hold our heads up proud walking together in Yerushalayim and Tel Aviv and anywhere and saying, V'nishkav Hashem Levado, we exalt you, Divine Holy One, presence of love and justice in this world. We know how alone it is for you, but we're your partner and you're our partner. And we'll keep wrestling until the dawn, until the light again rises on this long night. May come soon.
Thank you for listening. Want more content like this? Subscribe to our podcast and visit romamu.org to learn more about us. Please consider making a contribution to Romamu so we can continue to fulfill our mission to help spiritual seekers deepen their connection to Jewish wisdom and practice to help them become more compassionate human beings. We hope to see you in the synagogue or the Zoomagogue soon. Romamu, Romamu, Adonai.